Hi, and welcome to the Be Healthy, Live Healthy podcast. My name is Grant, and we have a great episode planned for you today. It's a topic that affects many people at some point in their life, whether it's a small ache or a large issue that requires surgical help. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point. Today's topic is back pain. This is a topic I've wanted to do for a long time, and I have even sat down to plan an episode out. The issue has been the fact that back pain is such a large topic with so many different potential causes of the pain that I've been busting my brain on how to break it up or even where to start, whether it probably needs to be a whole bunch of episodes. But this topic means a lot to me because I've been struggling with back pain for the last 5 years. I have foraminal stenosis, which means the spaces between the vertebrae and my low back are narrowing and rubbing on nerves, depending on the movements I do. It's something that I've been obsessed about, researching and finding new theories or ideas that could help me for the past few years. Being a personal trainer and not quite being able to figure yourself out has been a huge physical and mental source of frustration. While I was scouring the internet for different professionals and watching a million videos, I came across today's guest, Dr. Ryan Peebles. Dr. Peebles is a doctor of physical therapy who specializes and has a program for back pain called Core Balance Training. He has helped a wide variety of patients, from Olympians to the average person, and pediatrics all the way up to geriatrics. His YouTube page has a lot of free content available to the public about different issues pertaining to the back, but he also has a paid program with daily content that can help you get past the pain for good. After viewing his content, I knew how to do my back pain episode, have Dr. Peebles on. Not only is he a physical therapist, but his approach to back pain isn't broken up into just different stretches or different exercises for different issues. He has a whole body movement approach that absolutely makes sense. So often on the internet, and especially on social media, you'll find people who make large claims about a certain issue, such as back pain, stenosis, or SI joint pain. Often they don't even get into the anatomy of it. They just say, do this, and you'll have immediate relief. The problem I have with that is I think back pain is most definitely a mechanical issue. When I say that, I mean the reason you have pain is because either a mechanical movement or a structural problem causing your pain. Often they're intertwined. There are plenty of movements that would be good for one person with a certain ailment that would be really bad for another person with a back pain that has a different reason for that back pain. So when you're looking for help on the internet, if you do that, go to a doctor too. But if you're looking for help, do some research on the person that you're following. You know, find out if they are an actual doctor of physical therapy or an osteopath or anything like that. But sticking with the theme of my podcast, which is to inform people about something to the point where they could feel comfortable trying it, I have asked Dr. Peebles to come share his approach. I asked him because I believe in it and think he is someone who cares about helping people and not just getting likes on his pages. So I'm going to have Dr. Peebles introduce himself and tell us how he got to where he is now and how people can find relief for their back issues. So Dr. Peebles, I'm going to give it to you.
Hello, Grant. Yeah. And thanks for that nice introduction. That was very genuine. I can see that you're pretty deliberate and very thorough with your research. So respect on that. My name's Ryan Peebles, or Dr. Ryan, if you want to call me that. I am a physical therapist by profession, but my school of thought or my philosophy is a lot more of a melting pot of things rather than just physical therapy. I also have had a history of chronic lower back pain, and it definitely changed the course of my life. Started very young and lasted for about a decade. And so I did what you're doing now. I probably just started a little younger. So, you know, just countless hours and days and months of research has led me to where I am now, which is helping other people get out of back pain. And yeah, it really took a toll on my life and my passions, and became an obsession of mine. And so I'm happy to be here, happy to answer any questions you have. We can talk about, you know, your specific situation, which I know has been found to be helpful for people listening. You know, you can be selfish and ask questions for yourself, or we can just talk more general. And yeah, happy to go any direction you want.
Yeah, I think if we get just a little mix of both, you know, I'll probably use myself as an example, but, and I'll try to keep it, you know, so that people understand it and not just use medical terms all the time either. But you were a surfer, right? And that's kind of what back pain kept you from doing.
Yeah, I am a surfer, and yeah, I was a surfer, and there was a period of a couple of years where I was unable to surf due to my back, and surfing was actually a large part of my identity. So it was a tough couple of years. It was, you know, I had some depression and a lot of just like I had a lot of just feeling of doom and loss of hope because I was so young and couldn't even, you know, play basketball or surf or do the things I enjoyed. So it was like, what does my next 50 years look like?
Yeah.
You know? So, it's a scary thing looking on the internet. So, be careful. You can find helpful and you can find scary stuff on there too.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I mean, I'm 36, so I'm kind of in the middle of life, but my son is 6 and my daughter's 3. She'll be 4 next week, but you know, it's really frustrating when, you know, I coach T-ball, but it's like, how many times do I pick up a T-ball off the ground and have to do it like with perfect form so many times over and over and over? Or I can't, you know, play basketball as much as I want to with him. And I love sports and I want to help him through sports and help her through sports if that's what they choose to do. But I want to be able to do that without worrying about it all the time. You know, or it's frustrating when they say, you know, Dad, can we wrestle? It's like, Dad can't wrestle today. I'm sorry, I can't wrestle today, you know?
Not today, but maybe in the future, ideally, yes.
And they're getting big. And I'm 6'6", like 285 pounds. So
nice.
It's, they're going to be big kids. So picking up and carrying them is already getting a little tough.
Yeah, well, first you got to pick up and carry your own body, which is, I think, the key that's going to unlock being able to pick up them and add more weight. So, that's really the focus of what we do, what core balance training is. It's learning healthier movement, if you could say it in a nutshell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one thing that really stuck with me, and we'll talk about it a little bit. I have it on the rundown here, but I love the fact that I was watching a video on walking and you said, you know, you can walking is very healthy, but there's a walking to improve yourself and there's walking that can hurt you. And I'm one that has been walking a lot for the last couple of years because running or riding a bike or lifting weights hasn't been an option. And I started adding that in and I'm already feeling a little bit better. I really am. I've had having less flare-ups and, it's just already helped. So
what did you add in for the listeners? What helped?
Well, I've started having my hips more level and having my abs, you know, have more tone, which I think we'll get into, but you talked about when you walked across Spain, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And you kept saying, I'm going to have my pubic bone forward. I'm going to have my pubic That's bone right. forward. I've been doing that around my neighborhoods and I really do. I feel like it opens up the back and the there's a video on your core balance training page where you lie on a physio ball to kind of open up the stenosis in the back. And that has really helped as well. So,
oh yeah. On YouTube. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so pubic bone forward, I always like to clarify that is huge, and it's been super helpful for a lot of people, even if you just do that. But the clarification is you don't bring it forward by arching your back. No. You bring it forward through abdominal connection. The abdominals pull it forward from the front. Mm-hmm. And so it actually, like you said, it actually opens up the lower back.
Yep.
And, you know, if you were to just like arch your back and, shove your pelvis forward, that is a way to bring the pubic bone forward, but that potentially could make your symptoms worse. So
yeah, and you could squeeze your butt as hard as you wanted to, and that would bring it forward as well. But
yeah, you can also squeeze
that all day either.
Right. So that's a way to do it in a like healthily, but it's not functional. You can't walk around with your butt squeezed. So you got to learn how to do it with your abdominals, and that takes work. It ain't easy, that's for sure.
Yeah. So let's kind of get into it a little bit. This is a really big loaded question, but in your own words, what would you say is the root cause of low back pain?
That is very loaded.
I don't want to say not just low back pain, all back pain.
Well, I'm going to try to come up with an answer for that. The problem that I have with typical answers is I can always find a root that's higher than most answers I hear. So the cause of back pain is anterior pelvic tilt. Well, what caused the anterior pelvic tilt? These are the questions we really want to ask. So when I give my answer, just a preface, I'm going to be going way up the stream,
yeah.
Okay, to where the ice melts. And my true belief is that the root cause of chronic lower back pain has its lifestyle. It has a lot to do with not only just modern day, the amount of time that we spend sitting, that would be a physical lifestyle, but also the amount of just low level chronic stress that we're all under, with having to deal with finances and politics and global warming or whatever you worry about. You carry this, and these are things that we don't have a lot of control over. And believe it or not, when we carry stress, we carry it in our bodies, it can and does result in physical manifestations like muscle tension. You know, a lot of people carry, you know, have a lot of tension in their upper traps, right? Exactly what you're doing. So that would be an easy example for people to see. But another area that's less known is in our hips, tight hip muscles, hip flexors, lower back muscles. All of these muscles that tend to tighten up when we're under stress are the same group of muscles that functionally bring us into the fetal position, which is the protective position. And so I find it just really interesting. That's kind of what started me down the path of this, where I'm now, is the when I learned that and it made logical sense to me, you know, that was the beginning of the rabbit hole. And so, yeah, lifestyle and stress is the cause of most chronic lower back pain conditions. And now you want to get more specific or, you know, go down the stream a little bit, I'm happy to do that. But as I know, that's very broad.
No, but I think, you know, how you sit, how you stand, how you get up when you're going from sit to stand, you know, how you carry yourself, what position is your body in when you do those things, especially if you're going to do it for a long period of time. You know, one thing I always say is amazing about the body is its ability to adapt, and it's going to adapt to the way you're carrying it. And that can cause, you know, muscular imbalance. Commonly you'll see online that they talk about, you know, lower cross syndrome or upper cross syndrome. Here's the fix for lower cross. You got to stretch these and strengthen these. Well, if you really just move different over time, it's going to be better. And doing 10 minutes of stretching and strength exercises might help it for a short amount of time, but it's more about endurance and being able to hold those positions and have tone for an extended period of time, that you can do it all day.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like that's a whole nother can that we are opening right now. But I want to tie it into your last loaded question, which is cross posture syndrome is just another way to say what I was just talking about, which is, you know, the posture is closing up, and it's a low level and gradual move in the direction towards the fetal position. It's the protective position against whatever perceived stress, real stress, danger, physical danger. The body just tends to do that. And so, yeah, you have these people that will, and is extremely common. I don't want to say just people. I want to say healthcare professionals that will say, just stretch the tight muscles and just strengthen the weak muscles. That's the solution. But what I did that for 10 years. And I did that under the guidance of physical therapists. But what the problem is the tight muscles just tighten back up. And it's funny, but it's really hard to get to the weak muscles. They feel like they're inhibited on a level beyond our control sometimes. And so I think exactly what you said is right. I just want to reiterate that is that when you leave the gym, or your little workout routine, it matters how you move through your day. And that is what's going to determine whether the work you did maintains, or it's going to revert back to that posture that is caused by something upstream of just tight and weak muscles. There is a cause.
Yeah.
And so the way we move through our day and our life is a massive determinant in you know, the way that we carry our body and those tight and weak muscles.
Yeah, and I think 3 years of COVID, people sat a lot. You know, I think it probably grew exponentially, the fact that people weren't moving as much, they weren't going outside as much, going on Zoom calls like we are now. But it's about what you do all day. And I did a podcast about, like, you know, being active all day versus just doing a workout for caloric expenditure. You know, our bodies were used to running all day. They aren't used to sitting all day and then going really high for an hour and then sitting more. You know, you have to be able to do it all day long. And it's hard to learn. You have to be really specific about what you're doing all day long and focus on it, but it'll make a world of difference.
Yeah. And there's another thing. There's actually one of the mantras of the program is, it's not about what you do, it's about how you do it. And so, yeah, it is important to move around all day, but if you're moving with unhealthy movement patterns, that's not going to be helping you, right?
Yep.
And so, for example, it ties back into what you said about walking. You know, you could be walking in a way that's helping your body, or you could be actually causing some damage. And so that's really where the program is focused, is improving the quality of the movement. And yeah, of course, it is important and you know, to encourage people to get out and move more. And yeah, COVID did put a huge dent and increase the dent of the back pain epidemic. It was not just one pandemic going on. There's multiple. There's, you know, there's other ones too that probably are beyond the scope of this podcast. But I just want to say that if you spend all your days sitting for, say, 2-3 years, it's not only going to have a direct impact on your health because you're not exercising and getting the benefits, but your nervous system, your neuromuscular system is also decreasing its communication to those healthy muscles that are involved in healthy movement. And so you could get back up off that couch and start moving around a lot again and living more healthy, but you may be doing it from more of an unhealthy pattern, because you've given so much attention to the muscles and the nerves and muscles that are involved in sitting and just getting up and go to the bathroom or go to the kitchen. And it takes intentional work to rebuild some of those neural networks. I refer to them kind of like trails or roads or superhighways. You know, you gotta, when you stop using a muscle or a group of muscles like the deep abdominal muscles, they don't spontaneously return. And though the nerves that communicate to those muscles may have actually dwindled down, like through atrophy, which is where your body eats itself essentially because it's not using something. If you don't use it, you lose it. They may have dwindled down to a little trail that's barely communicating anymore. And what we want to do is we want to build those communication channels from your brain to those muscles back up to superhighways. And it, like I said, it doesn't happen spontaneously. That's the hard part about getting out of back pain, is you have to be very persistent, not just for a half hour in the gym, but through your day to stay focused on how you're moving for a little while. And eventually it can become more default.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Joe Dispenza?
Yeah. I am. I know. I've read one of his books. Yeah.
Yeah. He was in a car accident and hurt his back really bad, but he studies neurology and psychology, and he had a terrible back problem because he broke like 5 vertebrae or whatever it was. And he basically meditated and focused on those nerves to the point where he created more nerves going to those muscles. And he actually got
exponentially remember that
better.
Story. He wasn't ever supposed to walk again.
Yes, he was.
It was a, wasn't it a plane crash?
Was it plane? Okay.
I don't remember, but it was a terrible accident. He wasn't supposed to walk again. And yeah, I mean, I believe it. Maybe he wasn't doing physical exercise, but using whatever kind of superpowers that meditation can give you to, you know, send, you know, electricity. That's all it is. Yep. Is electricity down towards certain parts of your body, and it can help build those nerves just like you build muscle.
Yeah. And you know, he said he did it for like 3 hours a day, pure meditation. Yeah. And he dedicated his life to studying that. And you know, he's done studies where he had one group of people pull on a spring physically with their hand as hard as they could for like an hour straight. He said they were just undergrad students who didn't have anything else to do. But there was another group who just deeply thought about pulling that spring, and the strength increase in the just meditation group increased.
Yeah.
Just because it had more of a neurological pathway.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think there's studies that support that as well. Yeah. Yeah. And that reminds me of like Michael Jordan, how he used to visualize an entire game before the game, and yeah, to the finest detail of the way he would shoot shots and defenders and all that. So he had already done it by the time it was time to play. I think there's enough research to support that. That's legitimate. To meditation can have make physical changes to your nerves and your muscles and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Kobe Bryant was interviewed about when Phil Jackson first came to the Lakers and he made them meditate before the game, and he thought it was stupid. You know, like, well, who is this guy? But you know, he won 6 rings with the Bulls, so I'm going to give it a try. And then he fell in love with it, and he meditated all the time. Like, it works.
Oh, yeah.
It works.
Rest in peace, Kobe.
Yes. Yes. I know. I think in one of your videos, you said you're a big Kobe fan, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time.
So, what we kind of physically, we kind of got to neurology there, but physically, the way we move changes or makes our body adapt where some muscles are used and some aren't. Some will get stronger, some will get weaker and atrophy. But this can cause joints and muscle formations to be held differently, basically. Like yeah. for mine, my lower back muscles are extremely tight.
Predictably.
Yes. And the front side is pretty weak. And yeah. it's I've been fighting that for years, but it's like the front side is it's inhibited because the back side is so tight. There's actually Correct. Something called reciprocal inhibition where if one muscle is tight and working hard, your body actually tells the opposing muscle to, you know, relax.
Yes.
And you can use that to your advantage if you're stretching or trying to gain flexibility or something, but when it's causing a problem, it's bad. But
yeah, and it's a really hard cycle to get out of.
Yes, I found, I found that out.
Yeah.
But the backside of my spine, that curve, it's called a lordotic curve, has become even more curved. So the backside of my spine, the spaces in between the vertebrae have become narrower, where those nerves come out the side of your spine, then it rubs. So what I've been trying to do, and what a lot of people need to do with stenosis, is try to get those back muscles to relax and strengthen the front side so that those muscles will allow the spine to sit in a more neutral position. Right?
Sounds like it was right out of my mouth.
I mean, what?
How do we do
How
that?
How do we beat this reciprocal inhibition? Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, especially with the lower back muscles, it's such a tough cycle to get out of. So, you know, we fall into patterns, and the patterns are, you know, the patterns are thick, and they may have been going on for 10, 20, 30, even more years. And so, you know, we're breaking out. The goal is to break out of these patterns that have been going on for so long. And so to imagine that we can break a pattern that's been going on for a decade or two in a couple sessions or a couple weeks is, you know, it's quite ambitious. So I think one of the hardest and most important ingredients, I'm going to say two, the two hardest but most important ingredients are patience and persistence. So patience, just knowing that it's not going to happen quickly, and you're looking for 1% gains in improvement. And when you see those, you should celebrate those. Mm-hmm. And persistence in the sense that you're going to stick with it, well, for the rest of your life. Because it's not like even if you make it to the top of the mountain, that you're not going to still have forces like gravity pushing you back down, and you're going to be able to just give up and I'm because done. You made it and you arrived and you're there and you just get to live the rest of your life like a happy camper. No, it's going to be a battle that you never stop. So from the beginning, from whenever someone decides that they're going to take responsibility for their own health, that commitment should be forever and not for the next year or 5 years or 3 months or whatever. Yeah. So that's step one or step zero on how to address this problem of chronic tight lower back muscles.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say from the beginning that you asked me, you know, what's the cause of back pain? I often get the same question, but instead, what is the solution to back pain?
Mm-hmm.
And I always start with the yeah, it's the majority of it is a mental battle. And so that's where, you know, I'm a little taste of what I mean by that is it's the patience and the persistence is a mental game. So once you have that down, then it's like, all right, now what can I do practically to address this problem? And you know, if it were easy for me to just say in a podcast, then it would probably a lot of people would be getting, you know, there would be a lot less people struggling with chronic lower back pain. So it's not easy, but, you know, the strategy that we take is to activate the abdominals, become familiar with them. And what I mean by that is just to, like, first you become aware that they exist. And I'm not just talking about the six pack, but all the abdominal muscle group, which is, includes four layers of muscles, become aware and then get familiar with it, with what it feels like to engage them. And then we learn how to maintain that engagement while breathing. That's the biggest hurdle of all, is to learn how to maintain that engagement while fluidly breathing. And then you add in movements. So we start with simple movements, and then we gradually, over the period of the 3 months, we work towards more complex movements. And that's really what the entire program is right there. But over that time, notice I never at one point in this, to answer your question, I never said stretch your lower back muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Because anybody that has struggled with chronic tight muscles or chronic lower back pain and stretches as a solution, we all know that they just tighten right back up. And that's because they're tightening for a reason. And the body thinks that that's what is the best thing to do. Why else would the body do that? It probably is the best thing to do in the body, in that current situation, that current fitness level of the body. And so we're not trying to undo something that, you know, the body's not doing it just to torture us, right? You can agree with that, right?
No. Yeah.
The body's not just simply trying to torture us. So it's tightening the muscles for a reason. We don't want to undo that. What we want to do is we want to get underneath the problem, or more towards the root of the problem, and say, why is it tightening? Probably because the spine doesn't have enough support. So let's provide the spine with more support through those other muscles on the other 270 degrees of the spine, right? The sides and the front. Mm-hmm. And what tends to happen magically is that those lower back muscles just start to let go gradually as they feel safe to let go. And they feel that the spine is more supported. So they don't need to do extra work or compensate for some other muscles that are not doing their job. There's the long answer to your question.
No, that's great. That's great. Now you're talking deep core. For those that are listening that might not get what we're saying, and I love this about your YouTube pages, all your visuals, is there's so many layers of abs. It's a, you know, people go for the six pack, but we're not talking about that, right?
No, we actually, in many cases, are talking about not that.
Yeah.
But exactly. The other three layers. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not about the big movements. No one's going to tell you to go. No one should tell you to go do a bunch of sit-ups or anything like that. It's
correct. I can verify that you shouldn't do a bunch of sit-ups if you have
What I tell my clients when we're working on balance, because I kind of work with an older demographic and they want to work on that, is work on smaller movements. Basically keep the spine neutral, but add variables that would potentially make the spine want to go out of neutral.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's a good way to say it too. For those people that are resistant, because I know there's probably a bunch of like boomers or old timers that are resistant to what you're saying, like, don't do sit-ups, but I need to strengthen my abdominals. You can tell them that they took sit-ups out of military boot camp training and testing. And so if it's gotten that far down all the channels of communication that it even made it to military boot camp and they took sit-ups out because they know that is contributing to the chronic back pain problem, then it must be legitimate.
Yeah, absolutely. When we're talking about those larger movements, you know, movements that make you bend way over, such as sit-ups or even side bend a long ways, we're talking about these much smaller muscles right next to the spine that are responsible for much smaller movement, right? There's muscles in between each vertebrae that just their job is kind of hold on.
Yeah, right. So their job is not to move the body, but to prevent movement.
Yes.
And they do that primarily just by squeezing or hugging the spine. And so that if you look at the body as an entire unit, like one unit, it has these arms and legs that work like levers. And so those arms and legs can be more efficient levers if they are attached to a stable foundation, aka the axial spine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the spine shouldn't move for the arms and legs to be able to be more optimized, to be able to run faster, or to be able to, you know, whatever you do with your arms, arm wrestle or lift weights, it's best if they're attached to a foundation that's not moving.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell my clients that think of your core as kind of a rectangle or a square from right hip to left hip to shoulder. And at each corner, there's a ball and socket joint that can create a lot of torque, and it has to get the power from that. So your spine needs to be solid to get the power, right? If not, then it's going to be like pushing on a noodle. You're not going to get any power from that. A lot of times you just have to verbalize things in different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
You can tell people analogies. The same thing over and over and over, but say it one time a little bit different and it clicks. And I always say, you know, imagine if you were walking in a crowd and someone really bumped you really hard. Are you going to be able to correct with your spine? You know, is your body going to let you go to the ground, or are you going to stiffen up? And that's the job of those muscles deep inside. It's not the job of your six pack.
Yeah.
You mentioned the fetal position and kind of younger kids. And one thing I noticed on your program is you modeled it after movements of a baby.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty awesome. I do notice, as a kind of physiology nerd, young kids, I'm at that age where all my friends have infants.
Yeah.
But how when they pick up a toy off the ground, they squat. And uh-huh. They're in perfect form, you know?
Yeah.
I love their posture. It just works. But can you talk a little bit about that? I know you touched on it a little bit, but it's interesting how the posture and movements of a baby or an infant are so much more pure and cleaner than people who are older.
Yeah. So, man, that could be a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about an episode. I'm talking about a podcast channel.
Yeah. No, that's what I was saying. I've been really struggling with how to do the back.
By the way, I've been wondering this the whole time. Are you in the program? Have you done the program?
No.
Wow. Okay. All right.
I have consumed about everything you have that's free.
Yeah. Well, have you done the free trial?
No, but I'm going to. I actually talked about my wife about paying the fee and signing up today because.
Oh, cool. Well, at the least, just do the free trial.
Yeah.
Because it's just that alone. You could, you know, I'm giving away some things that potentially could hurt me right now, but you could just do that and work on that for the next like year.
Yeah.
And that would be probably life changing. Just that first module. So it's extremely valuable. And I'm saying that from a perspective that I get no gain from this. Actually, it hurts me because our customer service team is overloaded with people already as it is. And so I'm just saying that it's really valuable stuff. And it ties into the question of how all of this relates to human development. So yeah, we model after not just like a kid squatting, you know, a young child squatting, but we walk it back way, way earlier to infant development of the core. And that's because the core is the first thing that develops in the physical body of an infant. It's before the arms and legs, it's before the neck, They get a really strong core, and they can hold their legs up in the air. Their legs aren't even strong yet, but they have such a strong core, they can hold their legs up in the air, and they could be on their back or their belly, and it's incredible. You can just touch their abdominal muscles, and they're very firm.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do they develop that? Well, it's from being on the floor, and they are connecting to the floor and with these areas of the body we call support points. In the program, we call them anchors, the mm-hmm. core anchors. And so by connecting and pushing away from those support points and support zones, it engages a really healthy, natural group of muscles. And it's not just one muscle. And I didn't come up with this. This stuff was created by geniuses well before my time that are much more brilliant than I am. So this stuff is, it's from the disciples of Vladimir Yanda, who mm-hmm. came up with cross posture syndrome mm-hmm. and coined the term. So we just mimic that as adults. We get down on the floor, we find these support zones, we connect to them to the floor, we push away from them, we get a natural, healthy muscle engagement, and we meditate on that for minutes. And okay. we learn how to breathe while maintaining that engagement. And then, like I said earlier, over time, we just start to integrate movements. But to answer your question in another way, everyone that had a normal development, childhood development, had a healthy, strong core connection, because a healthy four-year-old child will have perfect posture and movement. And so they are the picture of a healthy movement pattern. And it's as we get older, through lifestyle and stress, and we just start to lose connections to these muscles, and we start to move in weird ways, aberrant movement patterns, compensatory patterns. We get injuries, we get traumas, mm-hmm. and they are scars, and they stay with us. And so the goal is to just kind of like, remember Nintendo, you could hit the restart button. Like yeah. the game started getting all weird and you're like, oh man, I just hit restart. That's really what we're trying to do, but it's not a quick thing. It's like, it takes months, and we're trying to reset our neuromuscular system to the way that we once knew how to move. And we just didn't even really know it.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. You're saying we all need to have tummy time.
Tummy time is module 2. So after you do the free trial and then just like milk that for as much as you can. And that could go on really, honestly, you could get benefit from that for so long. Then you do module 2, and that's tummy time. And then the rest of the program, the next 10 modules are just building off of those foundational layers of core connection, really. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Do you want to get into like specifically talking about upper back and lower back kyphosis and lordosis, or I'll just say
most 80% of the population falls into the predictable pattern. So patterns are very prevalent in this. You may have 100 different diagnoses. You could have, you could take 100 people and they could have 100 different diagnoses. One has a bulging disc here, one has a herniated disc there, and one has stenosis here, and you on and on. But the predictable pattern is that 80% of those people will have the same postural and movement dysfunction that led to this like very end of the stream resulting herniation.
Yeah.
Maybe it was on the left side of the disc. Maybe it was on the right side of the disc. Oh, I'm totally unique and different, but everybody is. I will acknowledge it. Everybody's got a unique history and situation, but we do find patterns, and And that can be just, you know, it's easier to realize this if you just look at the world as a global population of, is it 8 billion now? We'll call it 8 billion.
I think we crossed
8 billion, and 80% of those people at some point in their lives will experience back pain. Well, a much smaller percentage of that will experience chronic back problems. So let's just say, you know, let's just say 500 million people will have chronic back problems that are living on the earth today. That could be way off, but we'll just take that for example.
Yeah.
Do you think that we could find patterns in 500 million people with back problems? Yeah. So the pattern is that 80% of those people will have the predictable pattern of hunchback or kyphosis, which you mentioned earlier, and a hyperlordotic curve or an overly arched back, which leads to things like stenosis and spondylolisthesis and all the other things. And that one's a lot less, it's kind of sneaky. It's not as visible. You can't really see anterior pelvic tilt unless you have a trained eye. Mm-hmm. And it's even hard to see a hyperlordosis, because oftentimes people with an overly arched back will have a lot of muscle bulk in their lower back muscles to compensate for what's going on, what we were talking about earlier. So that those bulky lower back muscles fill the gap. So it almost could look like a flat back sometimes, but the spine underneath is the curve is accentuated. And I will be clear, because I always get this question. Yes, it is healthy to have natural curvatures of your spine. So we do want those curvatures. Mm-hmm. We don't want a straight spine. But the problem is that those curvatures often become over-exaggerated. So that leads to joint incongruency and friction and wear and tear and ultimately pain and problems. So we just want the normal amount of healthy curvatures in the spine.
Yeah. I've actually been trying to change my verbiage and saying, keep your spine neutral, not straight.
Yeah, but that's hard for people. Neutral is so hard. It's the hardest thing. So, yeah, it's like taking a little toddler and taking them bowling and removing the bumpers and saying, throw it down the middle of the lane. That's neutral. But the bumpers are what we rely on to stay in the lane, and those are not neutral. So so I prefer to, you know, the term neutral is so hard for people. And I will say, I think anybody that has you as a personal trainer is lucky, because you have done tons of research and you're telling them the right things.
Thank you.
And I would still say move towards straightening your spine, because oftentimes we have to think about overcorrecting a problem to get to neutral.
I gotcha.
Because just trying to get to neutral isn't enough. It's like, I've been using my right hand for, you know, my entire life. And so in order to balance myself out, I'm just going to be neutral in my body. But actually what you would have to do is you'd probably have to use your left hand for a couple years to balance your body out. So you overcorrect to get to neutral.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a big baseball guy. That was my sport.
Yeah. Oh,
baseball
okay.
Players are notoriously one-sided.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I have
played
that too.
Baseball too.
Yeah, that was always my sport. I had multiple knee surgeries in high school. I tore my ACL, MCL, and LCL all at the same time. The first week of high school.
That's called the unhappy triad.
Yep, the terrible triad, unhappy triad.
Yeah, I did that in my left knee. It was non-surgical, or could have been, but I had already gone through PT school, so I made it non-surgical.
Yeah, so I would have surgery, rehab, play baseball. Have surgery, rehab, play baseball.
Cycle.
Then finally, I broke the cycle. Now my knees are good. The good thing.
Good to hear.
So oftentimes with back pain, especially chronic back pain, there's a cycle of stressing out about it a lot. And I've definitely been a victim of this, where either you're worried about having back pain, or you're having back pain and you're worried it's going to get worse, or having a flare up. And that's frustrating too. But we have to break the cycle of thinking about it all the time, because when we stress out about it, we hold the tension like you spoke about earlier. When I have a flare up, I'm notorious for obsessing about it and thinking it's going to be worse, because one time I had just terrible back spasms. I was on the ground for like a week. Like, sitting up was awful. And for a long time after that, when I felt something in my back, I would just panic. Like, I'm going to have to do that again. My dad's going to have to back the minivan up to my front door through the yard, and I'm going to have to crawl in there and go to the hospital. But during a pandemic. But what's your suggestion to people who are getting results? Maybe say going through your program or any program, getting results, they're starting to feel better, but then have a setback, a flare up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that happens. I mean, I would say it probably happens more often than not, because going through the program, or, you know, the program is more of just like, it's like interesting. It doesn't really end. Yeah. People end the program and they go on with their life, but you're still practicing this postural strategy. I still practice it, you know. Yeah. And it's been, I don't know how long, 10 years for me. You're going to have setbacks, you know. It's pretty much guaranteed. And so this is advice for everyone. And typically what I tell people is, if you've been making progress, then that is, you've already won. And the setback, it set you back physically, it set you back mentally, it set you back with your pain. So you also need to go back to the basics of, you know, you're not where you're at in progress anymore. So you can't exercise or train the way that you were before the setback. You need to go back to the basics, return to the things that initially gave you that progress or started you on that progress. For a lot of people in the program, I just say, go back to module one and module two, because those things are phenomenal. And so that's my advice. And then what I finish by saying is that you're going to actually, most likely you're going to experience progress faster this time, since you've already grooved that pattern. You know, muscle memory is a real thing. Mm-hmm. So you're probably going to get back to where you were before the setback sooner than it took you the first time to get there. Yeah. Patience and persistence. And I think that it's just a lot easier mentally, psychologically, to deal with a setback if you know you have the tools.
Yeah.
And by definition, a setback is something, it kind of implies that you were making progress. So, you know, for somebody that wasn't making progress and then they have a traumatic event that, you know, sets them back, for lack of a better term, even more, it can be a catastrophic, because we've lost hope. It's really scary. There's a lot of fear about the future. And there's no end in sight. So that's, by definition, that's suffering when you have no end to your pain. And so we're suffering and we have anxiety, we have fear, and that's really tough. And for those people, you know, I think you just got to start by educating yourself. And that's my top of the mountain, the beginning of the stream answer to what's the solution to back pain. It's actually education. Mm-hmm. Because if you're still going to other people looking for someone to heal you or to fix you, you're about as far away from you can get, in my opinion, from healing yourself. You're going to have to run the full gamut of every solution until you can change your mind and say, oh, I am the solution. I'm the only one that can move my body in a healthier way. And the way I start doing that is first by educating myself about the problem and how to fix the problem. And really, that's what the goal of the program was, is just to provide an educational platform. I don't actually do anything, you know? So I just educate people. I don't put my hands on them. I don't touch them. I don't even wake them up and say, time to do your exercises. They have to do all that on their own. And so that requires full responsibility. I don't even remember what your question was, but
that's great. We're talking about the mental side of setbacks. And the way I like to look at it is, if you are making progress, think of it as going up a flight of stairs. And if you have a setback, think of it as falling down two stairs. You didn't fall all the way to the bottom. Like, use what you've learned on your way up to keep yourself from going all the way to the bottom, and then keep going, right? Yeah. The other thing I wanted to touch on was, you didn't say lay down and don't move.
No, I never say that.
No, that's one thing with back pain. The first thing you have to learn is your back's tight. And if, especially if you're in pain, your back's going to be tight. Like we talked about, it's going to, your back protect. Feels pain and it says, got to protect.
Yep.
That laying still is going to make it even tighter, or it's not going to help it anyway. Like, get your body moving, get your body temperature up even a little bit, and you'll feel a little bit better.
Yeah. I want to add another component to your staircase analogy. So maybe the setback was bad enough that it sent them back almost to the bottom of the stairs. But in their wisdom and knowledge that they've gained, they've lost zero stairs.
Yeah.
They still have all that wisdom and knowledge that they've gained from educating themselves. Not only that, but also learning from their body. You know, as you do exercise, you learn about your body, especially if you're listening to your body and you know where your thresholds are.
Yep.
So you've lost zero steps with that, but maybe you've gone all the way down to the first step, not the bottom, but the first step in pain, because maybe the pain just feels like not almost as bad as it was when you started, you know. Mm-hmm. But you can use all that knowledge and wisdom to get you back up to where you were much quicker than you would if you didn't have that and you had to relearn all that again.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And so that's the bright side, is you don't lose anything unless you hit your head really hard. Maybe if you hit your head too hard, maybe you lose a couple marbles.
Yeah, and that's what I mean when I say, don't stress about it too much or panic too much. If you're having a flare up and you're in pain, to remember that you have that knowledge.
Yeah.
And don't catastrophize, say, this is going to be the absolute worst again. And say, you know, I'm okay. I learned these things. My pain's going to subside and I'm going to keep going. Right.
Oh yeah. Never quit. Set that one from the beginning. I'm never going to stop. I'm never going to get to the destination until I die. So I'm never going to stop. And that's true for more than just the journey out of back pain.
Yeah. Yeah. And catastrophizing is a huge thing for not just back pain, but the mental side of any stress.
Oh yeah.
We like to touch on mental stuff on my podcast, and you know, if you always think about the worst thing that's going to happen, you're going to be more tense and you're probably going to start going down that road more so than get better. Right.
I'm a big firm believer in that. And it contributes to the cycle. It's also self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
Because like for me, when I catastrophize my back problem, I still have damaged discs in my spine. So I'm not like 100% healed. Yes, I am back to surfing big waves and I'm back to living a fully functional lifestyle. but my discs didn't like regain their fluid, right? So I still got to treat my body extra well. I still feel back pain when I treat my body poorly and go drive across the country, which is what I did last month. You know, I drove for 2 weeks and I felt pretty miserable afterwards. So, you know,
should have walked again.
Right. So, I still have the mental battles too. And in the past, when I've catastrophized my back problem, what I've done is I go online and I start researching like back surgery and disc replacement and all that stuff. And I found that it is self-fulfilling. Like I'm going down that path and I could be just taking the next step towards actually getting that surgery. And so why don't instead I put my energy towards getting on the floor, because this is what we say in the program, mm-hmm. and connecting to my core. And so I have made that switch before. And guess what? My path starts going in the direction of feeling stronger and better and thinking, I actually don't even need any back surgery. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a phenomenal thing to realize or believe in the connection between mindset and your reality.
Yeah. You know, we've talked a lot about movement patterns, and I mentioned it in the intro, you know, some back injuries, maybe you got hit by a car and you're going to need surgery and it's unavoidable, but
yep.
try to avoid it as much as possible. And it's kind of my opinion. Obviously there's,
like, oh yeah,
said, there's situations, but I think of Stuart McGill. I like Stuart McGill a lot, and he's, you know, a big fan of Yanda. But
yep. Is he into Yanda?
Yeah, he likes Yanda and
cool.
Satsuin and those guys a lot.
Cool.
He likes Yanda. But he's where I really got the fact that back pain is mechanical. Saying, you know, if you hinge your back at L4 or L5 and you create a problem with your discs and things like that.
And don't do that, guys.
No, don't. And you create a problem and you have surgery. Say you even got it fused. If you don't relearn that movement pattern or try to correct it, you're going to start hinging at L3, L4 mm-hmm. and just start the process over right above it.
It's called chasing the instability when they just fuse the next level up and then the one after that 6 years later. And it's a very common thing. It is so common that they have a industry term for it called chasing the instability.
I haven't heard that, but I do like McGill also says to pretend you had surgery.
Nice. He's so it's not all mechanical, because kind of woo-woo if you ask me. I'm not against woo-woo. I'm just against saying that back pain is 100% one thing or the other, because the other end of the spectrum is healing back pain. Dr. Sarno, who says back pain is 100% psychological. And I agree with everything he says, except that it's 100% psychological. I think it's mental and physical. So I guess McGill is the opposite end of the spectrum, and I'm right in between. I believe in the multifactorial component of back pain. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you there.
No,
I don't know if
you're going somewhere. What he says and pretend you had surgery is, you know, take it easy and do the physical therapy.
Yeah.
The outcome will be about the same. You know, if you start off slow, learn little movement patterns, and then gradually get into bigger movements, just like you would if you had surgery and were working with a physical therapist, that you'd probably be at about the same spot, but you didn't open up that spinal column. And
once you go in there, you can never go back. Yeah, I 100% agree with that and fully support that. I think that should be like standard recommendation. Before you actually get surgery, go through the entire surgery protocol without the actual knife.
Yeah.
And you will find that you probably a lot of the the, you know, I don't even want to use the word success in the same sentence with back surgery, but a lot of the beneficial outcomes of the surgery is that they are doing such a deliberate protocol after the knife.
Yeah.
So remove the knife, because that's probably what leads to the unsuccessful stuff, and just do that protocol. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that makes me think of something else that I was going to comment when you were talking earlier. You said, when you're talking about your back pain, that my discs did not get their fluid back. So yeah. I don't know if you've heard of Brian Carroll. He is one of the world's strongest men.
It's a name that's familiar, but no.
He squatted like 1,100 pounds, but he had just one of the world's worst backs. They wrote a book together, him and McGill.
Oh, cool.
And he actually, you know, had a split sacrum. His discs were just crushed. The bones were starting to grow, you know, together, bony protrusions.
It's a natural fusion.
Yeah. And he went to McGill and said, you know, can you help me? And McGill only sees certain people, but every doctor had told him he needs surgery, and McGill basically said, you're about as bad as can be. But he actually ended up setting the squat record again. But the thing that he, you know, it was like whether he should walk, you know, or lift anything over 50 pounds ever.
Here's my question. This might be too technical, but was he getting ridiculous symptoms? Was he having nerve pain? Oh, yeah. In his legs?
Yes.
Was he having motor loss? Like, did he lose control of some muscles? Like, I'm so interested to see you're saying that it was as bad as it can get, but to what extent was their nerve damage?
Yeah, that I'm not so sure.
He did have radicular symptoms. He had compressed nerves. Okay.
The book is called The Gift of Injury.
Okay.
By Brian Carroll and Stuart McGill. And they take turns writing chapters, and it's really cool. But
I'm here.
No, you're right. So now Carroll's a disciple of McGill, and he sees patients. And if you look at, you know, they put on his pre and post MRIs, which we can talk about MRIs too. But, you know, the first one, there was like barely any disc on there. And then afterwards, he had regained a lot of disc height. I've never seen that before. I guess I don't have as much experience in it, but the fact that he gained so much height just by strengthening his core.
Yeah. So I'm going to take that as a question.
Yeah. Yes. No.
Because I understand where you're going. So it's definitely possible for discs to regain height, and that could even be without stem cells. And that's because the space between your vertebrae is heavily influenced by posture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have an hyperlordotic curve or an extremely arched back, you have stenosis, you could simply increase the space between your vertebrae by squeezing your butt, right?
Yeah.
You tilt your pelvis posteriorly, you open the arch in your back. And so I'm going to give a couple scenarios for what could happen with Brian Carroll. Is that his name?
Yes.
So one, this is the kind of negative devil's advocate one, is that even an MRI is a static image. And so you could just change somebody's position that they're laying in, maybe prop their knees up a little higher in an MRI. And that would definitely, without question, show more space between the vertebrae. Like if I wanted to go have a terrible looking MRI for some reason right now, I could do that. I could just have my back arched in the MRI, and then, oh, severe stenosis.
Yeah.
But so that's devil's advocate. And then two is the guy improved his his musculature around the spine so much that the spine is feeling, not feeling, spine doesn't have emotions. The spine is so much more supported that they're propping up the vertebrae better, and there is actually more space between the vertebrae. And would that imbibe, that's the word for sucking in fluid, would that imbibe more fluid into the discs? Probably could. I just still imagine that if that would be amazing to see. I just still imagine the discs would be kind of dark in color or black, which it shows that, you know, they've been herniated.
Yeah.
But they could still have less, you know, you think about how, you know, they have the analogy where if your head is a bowling ball and you move your head forward, like forward head posture by 2 inches, it increases in the poundage on your cervical spine by what, 15 pounds or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you'd move the bowling ball back into neutral, that removed 15 pounds of pressure on your spine. Well, yeah, the spine will probably expand a little bit.
Yeah.
So that is probably more likely what happened. And I definitely think it's possible. What I'm just saying is, I don't think it's possible for a perfect disc that herniates to ever become perfect again.
No,
I think that the disc can be 100% functional again, and you can live a totally normal life. It's just going to have that scar and probably some loss of fluid. Yes, discs can heal. There's no doubt about that. They can heal. And I also want to say one more thing. I have not had imaging of my spine in over 10 years. And you know that you've probably seen my imaging video. And so it's for that reason. So I don't know. Maybe my discs do have more fluid back in them. And I just haven't had an image of them since I was in some of my darker years. And I'd rather just not see it and just go surfing instead.
That's just it. And how McGill puts it too, I'm not trying to like compare him to you or anything, but he says that MRIs are just a snapshot of everything in your history. Like, yeah, the doctor may see a disc protrusion on there, but it might not be causing absolutely anything, right? It's a picture of every injury you've ever had in your life. We don't know what is doing what.
Yep.
So
that's
they're almost
the truth.
Worthless.
Yeah. I McGill was influential for me in my early years. I know his big three.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't the solution for me. But he was influential just in inspiring to me. Like, wow, a guy could become that much dedicated to healing back pain. And so I think he did inspire me in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, and I really like the things you've shared with me about him. It makes me want to like grab that book, The Gift of Injury. But our methods are quite different, I think. I don't know much more about his methods beyond the big three, but this
a large part of his whole method. And I mean, you know, like I said, he doesn't have a program for the lay person or anything. He just sees
more for professionals. Yeah. So you know, this infant baby development stuff is like, it's pretty weird, and I wouldn't be able to compare it to him, but I do resonate a lot with what you're sharing. I agree with a lot of what he's saying, or what you've said he says.
I like those movements, the big three, but I think we have to start smaller.
I think a lot smaller, and really zoom in on that smaller stuff. Like, if you can master one tiny little thing. So for example, we teach a certain type of breathing in the program. It's actually the very first lesson. If you sign up free trial, you get this breathing lesson. It's simple. It's very zoomed in, but it's not easy. And something can be very simple, but very challenging at the same time. if you can master that, the day zero lesson, which really the program hasn't even started yet, it would make the rest of the program like infinitesimally easier.
Yeah.
It would just take years. You know, it's like asking a yoga person to master meditation. Yeah. It takes years to master this very simple thing about breathing that we do. I'm going to be working on it for the rest of my life, but it's going to be life changing for me for the rest of my life too. So I'm just saying, if you can zoom in that far and master one tiny little thing, it can have a massive impact. Whereas something like the plank is such a complex thing, even though there's not even movement involved, there are so many working parts involved in a plank that there's so many possibilities for error and compensation, to where you wouldn't even know. You could look perfect in a mirror, but and not even know that you're using a different muscle that's compensating, and like there's too much room for problems to occur when you do a big chunk like that, and I call that more zoomed out. I would just want to zoom in on one tiny little thing and master that, and then expand that like a foundational thing, and expand that into influence all the rest of the things that you do. And it just so happens that we breathe all the time, so it's kind of cool.
Hopefully. Yeah. No, I don't remember who said it, but said if you can't breathe in a certain position, then you don't own that position.
I like that too. Yeah,
like it totally makes sense to me. And when I'm without taking your program, I've messed with your anchors, and it's like, can I breathe holding it? You know, it just doing that all day would be really hard for me right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, and as a piece of advice that pretty much every student needs, if you can do the program, just foreshadowing, you're probably the kind of guy that likes to go big and, you know, do more, because you're an overachiever and you're an athlete and you're fit and all these things. These people, you have even harder time sometimes with some aspects of the program. It's really about learning how to do this stuff at a super low intensity. That's the art of it, because I could do the breathing at 100% intensity. It's actually rather easy, but learn how to do it all day long. It's impossible to maintain, have the endurance or the stamina to do something at 100% intensity throughout your day. So the art of it is learning how to do it in a sustainable way, which is 2% intensity, or, you know, maximum 10%. And then you just ramp up during the times that you need it. You're going to lift up a heavy bag. You do it a little harder. And that includes the breathing. There's a certain type of core engagement that happens when with this type of breathing. So it's the low intensity that is the key that I'm foreshadowing for you that you're going to want to work on.
Okay. Sounds good. This is kind of a weird question, but I think people need to hear it. How strong is the spine?
It's only as strong as the muscles around it.
Okay. Okay. Now, what do you think of chiropractors?
A chiropractor is responsible for being my greatest mentor and leading me down the path of, you know, for, I don't know if you can say this, but I feel confident saying this, but finding the solution to back pain.
Yeah,
I credit a chiropractor, Dr. Stephen Hoffman.
Okay.
I also credit a chiropractor for causing me more pain and misery than I've ever experienced from anything else in my life.
Yep.
And that's the chiropractor that caused the physical trauma to my lumbar spine and created an instability. So I can't generalize. my opinion on chiropractors. I think the individual is what matters, and the profession itself is full of a wide variety of individuals, because it's, you know, it's not quite as regulated as some other healthcare professions. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, in a way, they're kind of on their own. They're businessmen too, business people.
Yeah.
Too, because they're not really inside the medical system as much as, let's say, physical therapy. So they have to learn marketing, and they have to learn how to keep clients. And so there's a wide array of types of people, and that's who I would just do my research. That's my best advice to anyone interested in chiropractic. Yeah.
When I say I had that really bad weed growth on the ground, this was before I did all the research, but I walked into his office like shaped like a Z, you know, and he should not have cracked me that day. And he did, you know, high velocity cracking. And just made my nerves so mad. But then later I ended up going to a chiropractor who, he's actually the team chiropractor for Iowa State sports. I live in Ames, where Iowa State University is. And he basically is like a physical therapist. Like, he's just a completely different kind of provider that has the same title, you know?
Yeah, I think the best chiropractors are using manual therapy techniques that involve grades 1 through 4 manipulation. And that is, none of those are thrust maneuvers. Yeah. None of those are high velocity. Well, they're high velocity, but they're low amplitude. So they're not cracking joints. And I think that's really where there's not a whole lot putting that into practice, because it's not sexy. You don't get that ASMR pop that you get from the high velocity thrust. And so those are the ones I would look for. Yeah.
Now, I ask everyone this towards the end. What do you want to see in the next 5 to 10 years as far as your field? What would you like to see the public be doing, or what changes would you like to see happen?
Oh, man.
I know, I'm asking lots of loaded questions.
Is it realistic? What would I like to see, or like dream world?
I'd say realistic.
Yeah, so realistically, I'd like to see, I believe in what we're doing so much, and I don't know, I haven't seen anything else like it. Maybe there is something out there that's like it, but I'd like to see this type of movement retraining that is modeled after how we originally developed it. It's just modeled after ourselves, but ourselves healthier. I'd like for there to be a name for it. Like, maybe it could be called core balance training, whatever it is, but just a name for it. And I'd like for that to be a household name. Okay. So you go, man, my back's really hurting me, or man, I got back pain. And then your friend or your family member goes, oh, you got back pain? Just do core balance training, or just do infant development core training. You know, like, why haven't you already done that? Because it's that helpful for people. And so that's what that would be my hope. And for the people who are, you know, not willing or able to do the work, because there's a lot of involved in achieving progress with that, the patience and the persistence, the effort. I'd love to see advances in either back surgery or stem cell treatments for back pain, because those are evolving fields, and there's a lot of hope, but still not a lot of widespread success or successful outcomes. Definitely not enough research to support use of them. So I'd like to see advances. And, I think stem cell has a lot of possibilities for the future, maybe 10 years from now. So yeah, that's what I would love to see. That'd be the full gamut. That would be people who are so far gone that they're, you know, Brian Carroll's, that they just don't have his mental determination, mm-hmm. and they're beyond help outside of surgery or magic regrowing cells. And then there's the people that all the way across the whole spectrum of back pain to just minor back pain, and they have a solution, they know of a tool that they can just help themselves and not fall into chronic back problems.
Okay, that's awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I'd like to say that this has been awesome. I've enjoyed your questions, love your energy. I hope that your podcast grows and a lot of people find it, because I think you're super genuine and it's probably, yeah, this has been the most enjoyable, I think the best podcast guest interview experience I've had. Yeah. So I definitely want people, I want my people and I want other people to hear this. I know it's a longer one, so that's probably tough, but we can, well, I want to help get it out there because this is a good, I think this would be a helpful conversation for people.
So where can people find you and information about Core Balance Training?
I think the best place to start would be just going to either YouTube Core Balance Training channel, or if you want to just cut straight to the meat of it and get the most valuable information, you can go to corebalancetraining.com/masterclass. And that's where I have that masterclass. Maybe you've seen it. I think you have. And that just is 15 minutes of all the most important information I can share about the cause of back pain and what I believe the solution is. And then we also have a Facebook and an Instagram at Core Balance Training.
Yeah. And if you are looking for me, you can find me at Be Healthy, Live Healthy Podcast on Instagram, or at Be Healthy, Live Healthy Podcast @gmail.com.